Hey, thanks for listening to, what are we calling ourselves? Junk Connoisseurs. You're here with Alan, Jordan, and Alex.
Use only as directed. All right, so we talked last week about the concept of endearingly terrible. Mm-hmm. And I think the car I have picked tonight is the embodiment of endearingly terrible. I can't think of too many things that are worse that the three of us would purchase in a heartbeat if we were able to do so.
So you didn't go with terribly endearing. I thought you might go that way. You went with
endearingly. It's definitely endearingly terrible.
Got it. Okay.
A different ballpark.
That's most of the stuff I like, actually.
Yeah.
Some notes on this. Let's see here. None of us have owned one of these.
Okay.
I have had discussions with each of you about how much we would all like to own one of these.
Okay.
As I said. I have had a motorcycle with more displacement than this car.
Okay.
So y'all are gonna have to rack your brains to think about the motorcycles I've had. And and then
a Fiat 500 original?
Well, remember I had a Harley Sportster.
Oh, for like 1,200 cc's. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
that gives us a lot more room.
I'm thinking of one. I don't know if it's the right one.
Opel GT?
No.
Oh.
This is a mark that no longer exists, but this particular vehicle did enjoy a long run. It was built from 1980 to 2008. And if you consider the car it was built on, I think the car it was built on was first released in 1970.
Okay, so do you have one additional factoid for us to...
One additional factoid. This was brought to America by the biggest fertilizer salesman in automotive history. Like, I don't know of anybody who was a better bullshitter.
Okay. Is it built in Canada?
Just being able to. It is not built in Canada.
Okay. But so tiny displacement.
But I think you may have the guy.
Yeah.
Import, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the guy who did the Bricklin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The importer.
Nice. Trying to remember what else he did.
Now I know.
I forgot. Enlighten me, please.
Well, he brought us the Subaru 360.
Uh-huh.
The Bricklin. And the Zastava Corral, which we know better as the Yugo.
Oh, yes.
I finally got it there at the end.
Yeah, that took me far too long to remember. For some reason, I have it in my head that a Yugo has more displacement than 1,200 cc's. Which
11.
I have no reason to believe that.
The original spec for the Yugo GV, which stood for great value or good value, depending on whether you looked at the original marketing or the later marketing, was a two-door hatchback based on the Fiat 127, powered by a 1.1 liter, 55 horsepower, single overhead cam, Fiat derived four cylinder, which also powered the Fiat X19 and the Fiat 128 and a bunch of other fun stuff. And in the right hands, that motor can really be made to scream given the displacement it has. These were not the right hands. Fitted with a exhaust gas recirculation, a truly terrible feedback carb, and a catalytic converter. Again, 55 horsepower, 56 pound-feet of torque.
Oh, wow.
Only weighed about 1,700 pounds. The base price, which was really the only good part about it, was $3,990, which in 1985 would translate to $9,863 today.
So it was
literally the car for people who didn't care about anything else but being a car.
What country was this car made in?
It no longer exists, which is accurate. Crazy Vaclav would have had his own dealership here.
This is probably where the Simpsons were going with that joke.
So in 1985, they started importing this vehicle. There was only one body style. You could get a two-door hatchback. It was utterly terrible, but at least it was cheap. And it was not very well equipped either. The GV was the base model. The GVL, which stood for luxury,
of course,
better upholstery. That's it. And I can't find a description of why the upholstery was better.
I wonder if it was like you got carpet or, yeah, headliner instead of just sheet metal.
In the car was imported from 85 to 88. 85 to 92. 8 model years, actually.
85 to 92.
And they sold 140,000 of them here.
That's not nearly as good as the Citation.
It did not. And really, 85 and 86 were only the only great years because then they started to break and people realized that even $4,000 was too much to give for something that was going to fall apart less than a year after you bought it.
Oh, yeah.
They were all built in Zastava, Serbia, which is important later when we get to describing why the factory isn't there anymore.
I'm chuckling because I've read the book. I borrowed it from Alan. I've read the book as well, and I have a mind's eye image of how these cars were built, and it was pretty hilarious.
Imagine non-union labor in Serbia making like $3 an hour.
And drinking brandy on breaks.
Yeah.
Like,
that was mandatory. Sanction.
Yes.
Yeah, like it was provided by the factory, if I understand, was your...
They handpicked the best assemblers, the best employees to make the American version.
Right. And they got $1.23 more an hour.
Yeah.
However many.
Because they were like, and I get it. I totally get it. It's like they were cranking these things out for the local market, the Eastern market, and they wanted to make cars that would pass U.S. safety and emissions standards, and it was quite a different paradigm, and it was hard.
So the emissions were interesting because they kept getting exemptions from the EPA, as I understood, until eventually the EPA says no. In 1992, they say, so here's the deal. Every carbureted Yugo you have sold here, which was about 90% of them, so 126,000, none of them pass emissions, and you get to recall them all and retrofit them.
Oh, wow.
And Yugo of America promptly went out of business. Yeah. Instead, they're just like, nah, we're done. Now, there was a fuel-injected 1300cc model called the GVX, the kit on the GVX, beginning in 1988, got a fuel-injected 64 horsepower, a whole 9 horsepower more than the GV. Injection, alloys, ground effects, lights, and blacked out trim and spots. And it sold for $56.99, which at the time would be, I don't know whether for time, 2.5, that is, it'd be about 14 American, whatever, 5,700 times 2.5, essentially, is the multiplier. Mm-hmm. And it was a whopping half second faster to 60 than the GV, knocking off from 13 and a half seconds to 13 flat. So, hold on to your butts. The GV had a top speed of 86 miles an hour, making it the slowest top speed of any passenger vehicle sold in America in 1987. Joined by the GVL, the aforementioned luxury trim, the GVC, which had a sunroof, and eventually the Cabrio, which was a convertible. And these vehicles weren't known for their body shell stiffness, and then you cut the roof off. I'm curious. They didn't sell many of them. I'm curious just how, fruit roll-up those must have been. In 1992, the EPA recalled all of them, essentially. The company went out of business, and
how does that work? If a recall is normally by the manufacturer, the EPA actually was involved.
Told them they failed emissions and they had to recall.
Okay.
So as I understand it, the NHTSA comes in here too, because I think they're the ones with the actual authority to force a recall.
This episode brought to you by the first generation Mazda Miata, for folks who like to get away with driving like they're racing in everyday traffic.
Interesting tidbits about the Yugo. Stock tire size. Anybody want to take a guess?
Well, I'm going to say the diameter, the rim diameter, 12.
13s, actually.
Whoa. I'm surprised.
Rolling on dubs.
145.75.
Give that man a cigar.
145.75.
I'm just going based on ratios and what I expect. Rim width of 13. 4 inches?
I think they were 4. I didn't find that. The GVX actually got an upgrade to 155s. So all the meat you could stuff under the fender. Other tidbits. I found the options list in 1988. Passive shoulder belts that we, those things that we all hated and tried to kill us in a drive.
My first car had
one of those.
Were a $99 option.
That was an option because it probably became in about 90 or thereabouts. Probably
they were standard. They were standard in the early 90s on most stuff.
Yeah,
because either an airbag, or an airbag.
And everybody was like, "Yeah, we can't afford an airbag." I disabled the ones in my Saturn because they tried to kill me one too many times getting out quickly, or like trying to get the change I dropped in the drive thru at McDonald's. And
pop the door open.
Pop the door open, run down. Get dragged 2 feet forward.
Yeah.
Having had a few Ford escorts, I know what you mean.
My first car was a good save. My first car was a 91 Mercury Cougar with those.
The best part about the 91 Mercury. I had a friend who had one. It was luxurious.
Mine was pretty low miles. But it had, 7 feet of door. Mm-hmm. And the passive seat belts would have to travel up the edge of the door frame and then all the way down the A-pillar. It took 5 seconds to get out of that car.
It wouldn't stop in the middle.
It would just keep going.
I'm going. Okay. Air conditioning and stereo. The comfort package on the Yugo. Anybody want to hazard a guess?
The cost?
$250.
I'm going to guess $400.
$999.
Wow.
Just to have a radio and AC.
In a $4,000 car.
However,
the best option, and I don't know what it means, but oh God, I want to find out. For $149, you could get catapult seats. I need to know what catapult seats are.
Wow.
The only thing I can think of is the seats that like automatically flip all the way forward when you pull the little lever.
Like the fold and tumble on Jeeps.
Yeah. But
no, I do think that's what it is because I just pulled up some pictures. And when I type that in, it has the little lever on the side of the seat. So you can like
trebuchet seats, it would have been even better.
Well, the catapult would be spring loaded, so the trebuchet would have to have a counterweight.
I know.
So I'm guessing, like, what's that big iron ball hanging off the front bumper? Oh, that's so the seat slides forward faster.
Well, I always thought that the Yugo was intriguing from the little hatchback economy car that would have some potential for performance. I don't know if. Well, you mentioned that the engine had some potential in the right hands to make some power.
If you get the emission system and put a cam in it, they run good.
Because this is the era of the Ford Fiesta, the original Ford Fiesta. What was that based on?
A little before. That was the original Fiesta was just the British Fiesta.
Okay.
And they've always done
small cars. And then there was the Festiva.
I'm talking about before the Festiva, there was the Fiesta, these were all small hatchbacks and – Volkswagen was doing its thing. Honda had some. I was always intrigued by them, but I didn't realize until I read the book how poorly constructed they were. And that it was such an ancient platform that they tried to, by automotive standards, it was in the 127 started when?
I can look it up real quick. I want to say it was like 1970?
Yeah, it was somewhere in there. It was an old platform. 71. That they had been milking for a long time. They had to get them ready for the U.S. market, which meant that they had to meet emissions standards and crashworthiness/safety standards, and that proved to be quite the hurdle.
Well, you were talking about production of using chassis for a long time. Uh-huh. And of course, that led me to everyone's favorite, the Lada, which was based on the 1966 original production Fiat 124, another one Fiat sold the chassis rights to another company. But that one was produced until, I think, 2012.
Yeah, it's been, wow. Yeah.
When is it? Oh, 2010. So that was the VAZ-2105. It was produced for 30 years. They made over 2 million of them, and it was based on a 1960s Fiat chassis.
I mean, if we want to get the all-time champ with the same chassis being produced for a long time, I mean, you've got to go with the VW, the Beetle.
Beetle
43 till 2003.
Yeah.
And yeah, they made incremental changes every year, but that's like a 60-year run.
Yeah.
But they
that car also was good. Like, people... I mean, arguably.
I love them. But also, they were absent in the U.S. market after when? 80s?
76 okay. or 77. Yeah. And I think it was emissions.
Emissions and probably crashworthiness. Whereas they made them for other markets that didn't have the same constraints. So that's a big I think that's a what we'll see as a recurring factor. I love the vehicles that ran for a long time. Not all of them, but several of the ones I have.
Emissions on a small car was tough in the in the 70s because you slapped a catalytic converter and EGR on it, and then you've taken a vehicle that made 60 horsepower or 65 horsepower, which was adequate. And now it makes 50 horsepower, and that's a lot to ask to move a car around.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, I think that's a big reason that Yugo didn't do well here either. In Europe, these are literally sold as a city car or a super mini. There are, you know, and here we commute on highways, and, you know, we expect to drive 70 miles an hour to get to the next town, and these are not really suited to that.
Yes, that I agree.
Wasn't that during the 55 mile per hour speed limit era, though?
Yeah,
it was.
Not that people drove 55, because I'm positive they didn't, but
there were songs
it was
about
highlighted on the speedometer.
Yes. 55. Yeah. Just blow right past that in your, what, how many horse, 55 horsepower, you know?
Well, at the time, so I guess this truly was a car for the 1980s because you had the mandatory 85 mile an hour speedometer and the Yugo would go 86. Mm-hmm. So you were using all of that ribbon, you know?
So it had 13-inch wheels. It had an overdrive transmission or no?
So the GV was a four-speed direct, no overdrive.
No overdrive.
The GVX, all the injected cars, because I think there were some injected non-sporty ones later on too, but they got a 5-speed.
Okay, so they had
and
an overdrive.
You could actually get a 3-speed automatic.
There was an automatic.
Yeah, how do you make a Yugo worse? You take away the manual transmission.
Yeah, that is a car with that power level. An automatic would be dangerous by today's standards, and it probably wasn't. It probably was dangerous by 1985 standards.
I mean, you think about how things have moved along and how what we consider to be normal now. And a lot of the stuff that we grew up driving would be dangerously slow, you know. I mean, I remember growing up driving that Toyota truck I had that would, you know, merging on the highway was an adventure.
Right. Well, and again, we hit on earlier the 55 mile an hour national speed limit. That was brutal, but that's the way it was. So you didn't have to have a car that went 80 miles an hour because there wasn't anywhere that you could legally do that anyway. Yeah. And
brought to you by
Big Ass Beer. Not very good, but it sure is big.
I think, let's go around the table. I would buy a Yugo if it were running, driving, and $1,500. I would roll those dice every time. Jordan?
Yeah. I would honestly be looking for one that somebody's already autocross prepped because apparently that's a thing.
Yeah.
You would put a motorcycle engine in it.
I might, but realistically, the air quotes easy button for that would probably be the 1.8 out of a X19.
Yeah.
So you could big block it.
Did they ever get that big? I thought that they got a 1500 was the biggest the X19 got.
I thought the X19 had a, maybe it was just a 1500.
They might, but still, that is still, easy that button. Is, yeah, that's a bolt-in. Large,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a large displacement. 400cc bump, you know.
Well, that also has an aftermarket, so you can buy camshafts. Right.
There are and head there are components. There are providers that make that motor run.
I love that we're talking about a Yugo and a Fiat X19, and we think that the X19 is plentiful. That speaks poorly of the Yugo, doesn't it?
Yeah, like yeah. I know at least one person who has multiple X19s.
Yes,
I don't know anybody.
60,000 X19s total, and I think most of them came here.
Yeah. Well, the thing there is it was desirable and sporty from the beginning.
Right.
They did make the biggest of the Fiat single cam was 1.8, and go to Brazil. apparently they do, but generally everywhere else, 1500 was kind of the biggest you got.
Alex, though, would you buy a nice condition Yugo?
If I was given a choice between equal condition and price, Yugo or Citation, 100% I would go with the Yugo, outside other factors like needing to fit a class or something like that.
Sure.
But yeah, the Yugo would be a more interesting buy for me. Alan mentioned $1,500. I was thinking $500 with today's money.
So running, driving, anything for $500. So Alex, well,
running, yeah, driving, so that Alex wasn't part is living of my,
in 3 years ago.
I running or driving was not a stipulation that I had understood.
That's what Alan said was running and driving for $1,500.
I
missed that
part. I was just thinking I can
get in this car and make it most of the way to work. Because
how far is that? 3 miles?
It's 8 minutes, 2.5 miles. Okay. Yeah, like
it's a little bit of a miracle that I didn't end up driving one because I got my driver's license at the very end of 1991. So those, you know, during my late high school and college years would have been like junk.
Like they weren't worth fixing pretty much immediately. None of us are going to pretend it's a good car. None of us would try to make it our only car.
No.
But we would all try to make it our car.
in one fashion or another.
And yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure that like if one of us buys one, at least one of the other of us will own that same Yugo at some point.
This is the way.
Okay. Yeah.
This is how we do things.
Yep.
So let's talk a little bit about Malcolm Bricklin, because he first started, he was an importer. Mm-hmm. Didn't he bring in MGs or something?
The first thing he brought in was the Subaru 360.
Ah.
And he basically gave Subaru their toehold here when all they made were microcars.
Right.
And speaking of vehicles that are not safe for American roads, but he did that, and then he built the Bricklin, which was an attempt to make a safety sports car.
Yeah. Yes. Based in Canada, right?
Yeah. Built them in Newfoundland, I think.
And it,
where they have a strong tradition of auto manufacturing.
And sports cars.
Yeah, they didn't sell great, but they're neat. They're still around, you know.
Yeah, like a 351 Cleveland in it, didn't it?
Ford? Yes, you could get it with a 351 Cleveland, and then I think some of them got a 304 AMC.
Huh.
All right. Like, so before the Yugo, Malcolm Bricklin imported Subarus, and I think that actually turned out pretty good for Subaru.
After they cut Bricklin loose, yeah. And then, after going great.
And then was Subaru and Bricklin, were they somehow tied together? Or,
Well, he was importing them, and then Subaru was like, we got it from here, man.
Okay. So he started with Subarus, and he was an importer. He was basically hooking up the manufacturer in Japan, Fuji Heavy Industries, Subaru, with a dealer network or trying to produce a dealer network here, and he was the go-between. And then he did the Bricklin, where he was trying to actually
start the manufacturing company. From what I understand. Yeah. But it was low volume, and they only made a couple thousand, I think.
And then was his next venture the Yugo, as far as we know?
Then he got in with Bertone and Pininfarina, and when Fiat decided to stop building the X19, he convinced Bertone to do it.
Okay.
And he was the importer for it
for
3 or 4 years.
Got it.
And both the X19 and the Spider
Okay.
Then Bertone, because Bertone built the bodies for both of them. Okay. And Fiat was like, well, we'll put our engines in, but we don't want to sell them anymore. Mm-hmm. And Bertone was then like, well, instead of us selling you the bodies and mm-hmm. you putting them together, you sell us the engines, we'll put them together and sell them. And that worked actually for a little while.
Okay.
Oh, and then the boy. Yugo. And then apparently he tried to get the Yugo, he tried to bring the Yugo back in 2002. Like the next generation Yugo, he made brief inquiries with trying to import it again, and the feds just laughed at him. And we're like, by this time they're like, nah, Mal, we know you, man. We know what your game is. Go away.
Well, I don't know. I learned a little bit about the Yugo. We didn't make fun of it nearly as much, I think, as the Citation, but that's probably because it might not have been as bad as the Citation. We did talk a little bit about the man behind the Yugo, which I think is a very interesting story.
Well, that was every owner when it broke and they had to push it.
This has been Junk Connoisseurs.
Stay fresh, cheese bags. Nuts and bolts and sheet metal and other goos and potions. I don't know.